The following program is sponsored. The opinions and statements made by the hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect the views of WBOB or its parent company, the Chesapeake Portsmouth Broadcasting Corporation.
Welcome to The Lawyer's Edge, a program that seeks to answer your questions on civil, criminal, constitutional, and political legal matters with attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty. Robert J. Slama is a U.S. veteran and prominent attorney who has served as counsel for some of Jacksonville's most high-profile cases. Robert Slama is a member of the Florida Bar and the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Associations. He's argued cases in Florida, as well as constitutional cases, before the highest court in the land. David Trotty is a Florida Bar attorney, practicing since 2000, and is a certified civil and family law mediator and a qualified arbitrator in the state of Florida. His practice focuses on family and criminal law issues and mediation. He's a former Marine who served in Japan and the U.S. Embassy in Austria and Tanzania. Also a federal police officer with the Central Intelligence Agency. It's now time to discuss today's legal topics and issues and how they impact your family and small business. Now, live from the WBOB studios, here's attorneys Robert J. Slama and David Trotty.
Good afternoon, Jacksonville, and welcome to The Lawyer's Edge. There's a lot going on, certainly constitutionally,
right.
Roger.
Yeah, you know, we know the Supreme Court session right now, and they made some very important rulings today, whether it be the flower shop issue, and of course, you're watching the Muslim ban, the so-called Muslim ban that Donald Trump, by, I guess, executive order issued, and they ruled on that, right?
They did, and Chief Justice Roberts, okay. In a essentially 100-page opinion. So those of you who like to go online and read...
Who writes the opinions? Is the judge themselves or their clerk, and they dictate? How does that work? You were a former clerk, right?
I was. Okay. What generally tends to happen is the clerk gets guidance from the judge,
okay.
And then you kind of start putting together... because you know your judge. You start pulling together the research, the law,
mm-hmm.
And then when you give it to the... In my case, I gave it to a justice. I clerked for the Supreme Court of Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
So the Chief Justice, he took it, and it would get, you're talking about red ink.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard to identify where I was in that opinion somewhere, but they're all different. Some judges change small parts.
Uh-huh.
Some change it a lot. Some throw it out and send you back to the well and have you come back and kind of start all over. I mean, it just depends. But your signature is somewhere in there.
Okay.
Oh. But what's interesting here, though, is...
I wonder, because it was 100 pages. It's probably a whole team of people for that level of book.
Well, each judge has so many clerks assigned to him. So what can happen is you divide up the opinion, say, that one is working on this part, one is working on this part.
Ah, I see.
But in the end, like in this case, the Chief Justice, keep in mind, they only do... under Rehnquist, like 78 to 85 opinions a year.
Okay.
So figure up among 9 justices, divide that up. One takes the lead. The others can write, of course, separate concurring dissent, whatever they do. This decision, let's talk about this decision, very important, was a 5-4 decision,
okay.
With Sotomayor writing a scathing dissent, which essentially was arguing or articulating what the trial court did. Now, here's what's so important to understand. I can cut, because I've been listening to the commentators on TV, and again, most of them, they missed the boat. Here's why they missed the boat. Maybe they all practiced at some time, but it seems like they leave the analysis of the opinion itself or the decision, and they go off into ideological beliefs. Here's essentially what the holding, we speak of the holding of the court. And by the way, please call in, feel free to call in, not just about this issue, but about any legal issue. Call us at 222-TALK, that's 904-222-TALK, and we'll answer your question. What they did in this opinion, Chief Justice Roberts did, he affirmed, and this is very important, presidential power, and the analysis basically is broken down into two pieces.
Okay.
The first question always is, in our democracy, does the institution have the power to do what they did? Did they have the actual power to do what they did? So Chief Justice Roberts looks at the opinion and says, what role does the president play in making this determination of who may enter our country? They go through and read the opinion, the historical analysis, the use and exercise of presidential power. And of course, he answered the question. He does. He has the power.
Okay.
So what's the second question?
Is it constitutional or is it legal, discriminatory, or whatever it might be?
They asserted that there was some level of discrimination. And what was it based on? This is what's key. So follow me along these points. Do we look at what someone said 12 years ago when they weren't a president? Something they may have said, something they may have wrote, something they may have even expressed at a cocktail party.
Okay.
What about during the primary season? What about before you even qualified? Here's what how Justice Roberts answered this question. He said, we look to the four corners of the legislation and ask ourselves, is there anything in the legislation itself that is discriminatory? So let's say they put in the, and I'm making this up to illustrate the point, make believe they put in the legislation, if you are brown-haired, brown-eyed, and you come from Somalia and you're 5'2", and you support Castro.
Okay.
You ain't coming. If you're Muslim, you adhere to Muslim beliefs.
In the statute.
In the statute. No, well, of course.
At least the executive order, excuse me.
You're Muslim and you subscribe to Sharia law.
Okay.
We're okay with non-Sharia law people coming in, but we're not okay with if you're Muslim and you believe in Sharia law. Now, that would be not facially neutral. I believe under those circumstances, the Supreme Court would have said, no, you can't do that. Out it would have gone.
Okay.
Here's what happened. They looked at it and said, correctly, here are the countries, North Korea, Somalia, you know, Yemen, so on and so forth, Venezuela. The prior administration, not just this one, had said that these countries have a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, see, people, that's what I said. When we get into facts these days, as a friend of mine says, there is no real in the street anymore adherence to a process of discerning facts. It's facts by consensus. In other words, if the four of us get together and say, hey, we want these to be the facts, that's what the facts are. In other words, people are prone to interject perception. You know what a court does? A court actually distills out, or should. Not that I don't respect your opinion, because that's what happens in the street. A court doesn't care about your opinion. It cares about distilling, very carefully, distilling the facts. You know what that means? Taking the apparatus of perception out of the facts. So in other words, today, is it a fact, Roger, that President Obama had certain countries identified that were the same countries identified by Trump?
Yes.
The answer is yes.
Okay.
Now, because your perception is different, have a different perception. Those are the facts. Those are the distilled facts. So here's what they said.
Okay.
They looked at it and carefully analyzed it and said, we don't see anything in here that's facially going to tell us that there is, quote, a discriminatory intent based on history, based on the rationale, and based on, now we got to move into another category, by application. Now, for the people out there who are part of the four judges, justices, who, if you're sitting here right now saying, but how does this actually work and play? What it means is tomorrow, if a guy from Somalia or a guy from Yemen wants to come to the United States, all he has to do is apply. If he's denied, he goes to court and gets to prove and put on evidence and say, look, I'm a good guy. I'm not a terrorist. I'm a professor. I'm coming here to be a professor at MIT. And the court can say, yes, absolutely. So now what you're getting is individualized screening. And if someone is denied, they have an opportunity to go to court and still come to the country.
Welcome to America.
It's another layer. But in other words, so this belief is that there is still, quote, a ban is incorrect. Call us at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-TALK. We're here for you. Call us about any legal issue.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Welcome back to The Lawyer's Edge. I'm Roger Henderson, not a lawyer, but Robert J. Slama certainly is. And we're talking about the recent Supreme Court ruling that happened today when the so-called Trump Muslim ban was taken to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the court has ruled in a very narrow decision, 5-4, which means it was almost split. But because it was an even number of justices, one extra judge ruled in favor of the Trump's decision. And you concur with that ruling based on the law.
Based on the
law. What did Sotomayor have to say in her dissent? Did you look at that at all?
Yes, I did. She essentially said that this is going to – she basically took whatever the trial court's positions were and stayed and adhered very closely to those, which is she's looking outside of the four corners of the legislation and saying, let's – look and try to discern, I call it mind reading, what the intent is. Now, I want to refer you to a different opinion and a different case law.
And you mentioned, too, at the very beginning of the program, that even though it's called the Muslim bans, it included North Korea. How many Muslims living in North Korea? Probably -3.
Yes.
Venezuela, probably a very small Muslim population there. So, you know, it has to do really more than anything else with national security and not necessarily Islam.
That's correct.
Okay.
And let's go into another body of law, and I'll show you why this is consistent. In police stops, the Supreme Court weighed in some time ago and said, Supreme Court doesn't like mind reading. They like, is there a reason for government action? Very important to understand. So it goes like this. In the cases where we like to talk about so-called police profiling, Scalia wrote the opinion of the court back then and said, if Roger is pulled over, though he is African-American, he's pulled over because his taillight is out. We're not going to ask what is the mindset of the officer who pulled you over. The question is simply this. Roger Henderson is a fact. Did you have a left taillight that's out? I did. Was there reasonable suspicion to believe you committed a traffic infraction? I did. That's it. End of the inquiry.
Now, would there be, I guess it would have to be introduced into the evidence, whether or not there were other factors that, do police have discretion not to pull me over, in other words, and does everyone with a broken taillight get pulled over an equal number of times?
Now you're addressing what's called discriminatory impact, but where this becomes, which you can always argue discriminatory impact. The issue, though, is this. Are you out of that citation? No. Where the issue really comes up is in what we call a motion to suppress. So let's follow the analysis. Roger's pulled over. He's got a taillight out. While the officer comes up to the side of the door, he's examining you. That's what they're trained to do.
Okay.
He's not just there to look at your taillight. You understand?
Once I've been pulled over, you know,
everything's fair game.
On the table at that point.
He gets to use his nose, his eyes. In other words, the apparatus of perception.
Okay.
Nose, eyes, ears, touch, everything. Now he says, I smell marijuana.
Why do you like to use me in these examples that you make? You wouldn't smell marijuana around me ever. So I just want you to know that.
Keep you engaged. Okay. Keep you engaged. To make
Let's
it real.
Somebody else named, you know, hypothetical guy named Steve.
Jim.
Okay, Jim.
So now While he's standing there, he smells marijuana. Okay. So he says...
When pulling Jim over.
Pulling Jim over and says, Jim, I smell marijuana. No, you don't. Yes, I do. Sir, please step out of the car. Now from there, it leads to...
A beating. No, I'm joking.
A search of the vehicle.
Okay.
And as he goes into the vehicle searching and looking for marijuana, he discovers a gun. So now we have a convicted felon. I'm making these facts up, but it happens.
Okay.
A convicted felon in possession of a gun, concealed weapon, marijuana, not to mention it all began because of a little taillight.
Okay.
So what would happen is someone, the attorney, would be filing what's called a motion to suppress to say, you could not stop this vehicle because blah, blah, blah. Thus, the Supreme Court, how important what seems like a very minor ruling. The fact that Roger comes into court as an attorney now, I'm making you an attorney, coming in saying, but I've done all the research, Judge. Only African-Americans get pulled over for left taillights out when they're driving at night in this neighborhood. Nobody else gets pulled over. And here's what Justice Scalia said. You might be exactly right, Roger, but guess what? It's absolutely irrelevant. Why? I'm not going to mind read every cop and every stop. What I'm saying is, as long as he can point to, objectively, very important word, objectively, question, was there actually a traffic violation for which Roger or Jim Smith committed? As long as there is, I'm good with it. Now, take that same analysis. Watch what the Supreme Court did yet again. Do we care about the individual intent of the president when he creates legislation? What Roberts said was, I don't. As long as it's facially neutral, as long as that legislation, in this case, executive order, says it applies for these reasons, we've picked these people for this reason, threats, they don't screen people right, they haven't certified. In fact, would also help them, by the way. This is probably not a known fact that I heard yet. They took someone off the list. One of the countries came off the list because they complied with our screening procedures.
Okay.
All of that sounds then facially neutral. Now, your argument that you were getting to is, while everything may look clean, at least in the writing of the executive order, yeah, it's still for someone to say, but in application, the application of that executive order, they are engaging in religious discrimination. So I'm telling all the people out there who are nervous, this is what's so great about our courts. And this is when I say this as a proud member of, as an officer of the court, I'm a proud member of the judiciary because we are part of the judicial branch of government. I am. Mm-hmm. So is every other attorney. I take pride in this because let's say tomorrow, Mrs. Smith is coming into the country from Yemen. And she goes through the process, or tries to, and says, look, I'm a good person. I'm from Yemen. However, I'm college educated. I'm coming here to work for CSX. I specialize in this area of IT, and I want to work for CSX. I want to live in Florida. She goes through the process, and she keeps getting denied, and everyone says, no, you can't come here. Well, now she's a little bit suspicious, right? We as Americans, by the way, I try to tell everyone this. This is one of the first books you get introduced to in law school. It's okay to be suspicious. There's a book every American should read. It's called Democracy and Distrust by J. Ely. E-L-Y, put that on your reading list. Not a big book. Essentially, he says, we love democracy, but we greatly distrust it. Why? Jefferson had a very strong stance against tyranny. In fact, I just got back from D.C. I love sitting in the Jefferson Memorial. He's my reason for being. As you read, and he says, it's written, inscribed, I have set my mind against every aspect of tyranny that may exist in this world. Mine is to find it and kill it in all its forms. Great statement of individual liberty and individual rights, which if you're a civil rights attorney, if you don't buy into that, you're in the wrong planet. So I love sitting there looking at Jefferson and him pointing to this great statement of the natural law. He was a natural lawyer. What tends to happen in our world, though, you know, these are great precepts, right? You and I know they don't mean anything, as I like to say, if they don't mean something in the street. So what does it mean for Roger or Jim Smith to have all these rights, yet someone on the street takes them away? So let's get back to Mrs. Smith.
Okay.
Mrs. Smith's trying to come into the country. From Yemen, because she wants to work for CSX.
Okay.
She's college educated. She's pulled herself up by the bootstraps. She says, I understand, Mr. President, your policy, but I'm not one of them. I'm screened. Screen me again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not one of these yahoos who's trying to blow up the United States. In fact, I love the United States.
But
I want
that
to work
doesn't give her a constitutional right to be here because she's not a citizen, right?
No. Hey, so I'm following your line of thinking, okay. Or the people who fear misapplication or misuse.
Okay.
Then why is she not being allowed in? If the idea is there's discrimination against her because she's Muslim, because she wears Muslim clothes, believes in Sharia law, she has the right to get in front of the trial judge if she then is denied and say, Judge, look at me, here I am. I put Miss Smith on the stand. I ask her all these questions. Let's go through your associations. Do you love the United States? Do you pledge allegiance to the United States? I'm looking at you. Do you have any ill will against Trump, against the administration, against the people of the United States? You go through all of it. It's like a citizenship examination demonstrating that her intentions are real to be here. And she has no ill will against the United States and has actually a place to go, things to do, a life, a career, and that it's in the best interest of the United States for her to be here. This is why I tell people how important the judicial process is in one individual judge. Though there is this ban, though there is this generalized whatever out there, that one lady, she may not matter. This is why I do what I do. She may not matter to your neighbor, and she sure as heck may not matter to a lot of people in this country, but to the Constitution says, Madam, due process says you have a right to be heard. And as you have your right to be heard in an evidentiary hearing and in front of a judge, that judge can look at her and say, I find no fault with this lady. Lady, you're coming into the United States of America. That is a great thing. So all this fear that through this process, now think about what we're really doing, because this is lost.
So essentially the ruling that was made today still allows people from these countries on the terror watch list, country list, I guess you'd call it, to come into the country, provided they go through a second level of vetting that someone from, say, England wouldn't have to go through.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is why when I say...
Or the Bahamas, wherever it is.
But this is why it's now... There's always a way around everything, and this is why we understand this, but the mainstream media needs to get a hold of this. You realize other people then, like they did before, I'll leave Somalia, I'll set up residency in England for 2 years, right? And then I'll come in through the back door. That's one way. I'll also move, try to change my residency to Canada. A lot of people like to go to Canada for that reason and come in.
So the U.S. State Department no longer sees them as someone from Yemen. They see them as someone from Canada, if they've had residency in Canada for the past couple of years.
You're going to have all these issues litigated.
Huh.
And for every force, there's an equal and opposite reaction. People are rational actors. This is why what Trump is saying is, I got to totally vet you. His words are, I need to know the country of origin. What is your country of origin? So, in other words, is it a sham that you set up?
Not just your country of most recent residency.
There you go.
Okay.
So now I'm just saying, whatever Canada decides to do with that person, I'm just saying, if that person, you know, a lot of people then have dual citizenship. I can be Italian and U.S., you know, some people do that. But if you do that here, I mean, in other words, this litigation always is far from over. So dual citizenship, all kinds of stuff. What do you do? What if someone's only in that country for 6 months and they can establish some sort of citizenship in that time frame? You know, but
there's certain third world countries that actually will sell you their citizenship as a way that they raise tax revenue. Literally.
No, I think that came up as well. But anyway, so the decision today, those of you who don't agree with it or don't agree with what was perceived to be this Muslim ban, I hope I put your mind at ease. And for everybody else who was in favor of the move, it's all good. But either way, the Supreme Court gave us an answer with 105 beautiful pages. Call us at 904-222-TALK, 904-222-TALK. We are here for you.
Talk Radio, AM 600, 101.1 FM, WBOB.
With SRN News, I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Key Republicans are welcoming the Supreme Court decision upholding President Trump's travel ban on visitors from mostly Muslim countries. They say it's going to help stop terrorism. And a sharply divided high court today upheld the president's ban, rejecting a challenge that it discriminates against Muslims or exceeded the president's authority for that matter. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote for the 5-4 majority. The presidents do, in fact, have substantial power to regulate immigration. He also rejected the challenger's claim of an anti-Muslim bias in the ban. Meanwhile, the high court issued a ruling that's being cheered by pro-life groups around the country. It says a California law that forces those pro-life crisis pregnancy centers to provide information about abortion violates the Constitution. And that also casts doubts on similar laws that are still on the books in Hawaii and Illinois. Strong session on Wall Street. The Dow was up 100 points. This is SRN News.
Download WBOB's mobile app for free from your app store. Powered by Duval County Judicial Candidate Kimberly Sadler.
This is Bill Martin with God First Ministries. God's Word is a great treasure that He has given to us. Psalms 119, verse 103 says, "How sweet are your words to my taste, sweeter than honey to my mouth." Psalms 119, verse 72 says, "The law from your mouth is more precious to me than thousands of pieces of silver and gold." God's Word, the Bible, is truth, light, and life. It reveals the goodness and fullness of provision that God has made available to you. I want to encourage you to spend quality time in God's Word. Honor God by honoring His Word. See what God has to say to you.
This message has been brought to you by God First Ministries of Jacksonville. For more information, visit their website at godfirstmin.com.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for a healthcare plan, or more importantly, if you signed up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare. MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have hundreds of thousands of members all across the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2.5 billion of each other's medical bills. Best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is about $500 a month. Your savings may be less or more, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. Here's the number to find out more. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 877-64-BIBLE. That's 877-64-BIBLE. 877-64-BIBLE.
Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church, invites you to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday expository preaching of God's Word, 7 p.m. Sunday expository preaching of God's Word, 7 p.m. Wednesday Bible Q&A with fellowship meal. They're located at 12021 Old St. Augustine Road in the heart of Mandarin, just 1 mile south of I-295.
This was one of the funniest things ever to see Jim Clapper out there. I mean, is he still selling that awful book he wrote? Everyone's out there hawking a book now. No, Jim, here's all we want to know. Were there other informants inside the campaign? Were there other people that you all sent inside the campaign? Lord knows who else they sent in there. They tried to say yesterday, oh, there was no one else. How do we know that? I don't trust these people farther than I can throw them.
Laura Ingram, now weekdays 9 to 11 a.m. on AM 600 and 101.1 FM WBOB.
This is The Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama, attorney at Law Roger with you. And just to give you some background on Robert, you are a member of the U.S. Supreme Court Bar Association, right?
That's correct.
Is that what it's called?
The Bar of the United States Supreme Court.
Okay.
That's correct.
So you've argued before the U.S. Supreme Court Bar before?
I have presented briefs before the Supreme Court, and I was positive it was in a civil rights case that I was going to get cert granted so we could proceed. My facts were beautiful, of course, as everyone thinks they are. And yet, a few years later, they then granted cert on that issue.
Okay.
But I didn't get the melon, but I practice in the Middle District of Florida, the 11th Circuit. And of course, the United States Supreme Court.
Okay, 904-222-TALK is the number. If you have any legal question at all for Robert Slama, 904-222-8255 is our number. And it's good to have you, you know, hanging out with us on Tuesday. Get to learn a lot about how the courts work and the Supreme Court, state courts, etc.
You know, because to a lot of people, what I like to try to do is demystify the court process, right?
Okay.
Because if you just listen to commentators, you know, one of the best, I think, Judge Napolitano, because he hits the salient points, at least for whatever the issue is. But, you know, to use the phrase that we use today, and I think to a certain extent now it's getting overused, is this, let's unpack it. Well, unpack it, I'm not sure what that means these days, but they go through this lengthy process. What happens to most of us is, here's what I know, that in your lifetime, whoever's listening and can hear my voice, you're going to be involved in the legal system in some way, whether it's a traffic ticket.
Whether it's being called up to jury duty.
Jury duty, which we've talked about before. Mm-hmm. Two, something more important. You may be a victim of a crime. What are your rights as a victim of crime coming into the court? You may be suing someone, you know, whether it's something the state did to you, say eminent domain. So you're defending against the taking of your property, which, by the way, people don't always appreciate this. There's only two times you're entitled to a full jury. Normally we have a jury of six, but you get a jury of 12. One, of course, is in a capital case, any capital case.
Define capital case.
Life in prison, capital sex, or a death penalty case.
Okay.
When's the other time? Eminent domain, taking your property. That's how serious. Now, people jokingly say.
How often does that happen these days? I guess all the time when they're building highways, et cetera, right?
Oh, yeah.
And now the Supreme Court has ruled that if a business wants to erect a shopping center or a mall, they can use eminent domain to take your property away.
That's exactly right.
And can pay you whatever they think is fair and not what you think is fair, right?
Well, no. That's where what your right is. Your right is to a jury trial to value the property. So in other words, let's say you're the city of Jacksonville now.
Okay.
And you've taken my property and you say, well, I want to pay you $42,000. I say, no, it's worth $2.5 million. They say, no, I only want to pay you $42,000. I have a right to go to a jury trial and have 12 people, regular citizens, sitting in that box, present them evidence of value, and that jury comes back and says that property's worth $2.5 million. The city of Jacksonville is paying $2.5 million for the taking.
Mm.
But that's why I say these rights, what I get concerned about when I listen to the dialogue in the street these days, which isn't really dialogue. It's not dialogue because no one is really listening. There isn't an exchange of ideas and information. These rights, these things that our republic is built upon, these aren't matters of no consequence. So let's take it down, keep coming down. So maybe you don't have a business and you don't have necessarily a taking. You may have a situation where government engages in what we call arbitrary power or arbitrary and discriminatory treatment of an individual just solely based on their power. So we've seen that play out, and that can play out in different ways. All the way to school cases, we say each has a right to a public education. I was implore people, go around and look at the different schools. Do you want to tell me? Please call me. You're out there with whether you have kids in school or not. 222 talk. You want to tell me Hendricks Elementary operates and gets the same as Johnny Ford? I don't think so. When it comes to even their trips, their budget is different. Now, before we get into this, active PTA, a lot of schools have an active PTA. So, and I'm on it. So before someone says, well, wait a minute. They do a good job. They do a good job. But their base is higher than, say, another school where the ability of the people to give is much less. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So you can't say the two are equal. In terms of the books, one school has laptops. One school has all of these tablets and stuff. I know for us over at Johnny Ford, the PTA, we had to raise money in order to get the principal and the teachers Montessori trained. Why did the PTA have to spend that money on that? See?
And that's something that's beyond what the taxpayers are paying. This is something that was given and funded through private donations, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
And one of the things, by the way, shout out to Vitti, regardless of what you think of how he went about doing things. He was able to recruit money. He had a plan. As one article showed, about a month ago or so, positive change. The problem is, now listen to this. Here we are, again, talking about interaction with the law, the school board. You know, as of today, you realize when the results just came out from the reading, 48% district-wide. Your third graders, half of them, can't read. If you've looked at, and I don't know if you've looked at the test, you should, to see what the standard is. You still have 50%, more than 50%. And under Vitti, he increased 1%. Roger, I say, of all the things in this community that people should be up in arms about, you have a rate of 50% that third graders can't read. And this goes not only unnoticed. Here I am. You've heard me say it. Keep watching the news and see the next time in either the Times Union or on TV, you hear anyone talking about it. Do you know what that means when you have 50% of your third graders? And this is an issue that's of importance to me, because as I've gotten involved, and I'm probably going to run, I'm pretty much dedicated to running in my district for the school board the next time around, because as I've talked to
educators. You've heard it first here on the Lawyer's
You've
Edge.
Heard it first here. Trust
Robert
me.
Robert Slama has made his announcement.
Oh, it's an easy announcement because I care about the kids and I care about this aspect.
Okay.
When you talk about remediation, how do you remediate? How do you remediate third graders? I'm just throwing this out there for you, for all of you who are listening, and please take a look at this. Go to your schools, go anywhere you want to look and ask them and find out how we remediate third graders. And what you're going to find is we keep doing the same old thing, and hoping that something changes. There are other ways to do it.
Well, the natural reaction to that is some people would think that, well, the kids who are really doing poorly are those who come from, the at-risk areas where it's not an intact home necessarily. But when you have more than 50% citywide, this is affecting a lot more than just the at-risk homes, right?
And certainly it may disproportionately affect others, but absolutely right, is when you're sitting with 50%, actually more than 50%, because we're dealing with 48%, and you go up a point and you go down 2 points or up a point and down 2 points, what it means is the system-wide. If the best it can produce, and I'm saying, look historically, you don't have a jump of 10 points.
Right.
You don't have a jump of 3 points. What does it say? We're not remediating very well. We're not managing.
And you may think, okay, I don't have kids in third grade, so this doesn't affect me. Yes, it does, because fast forward 20 years, these kids are going to be the adults in our society, and we'll have, hopefully by then, most of them will be reading, but a less than adequately educated workforce in society, which can end up causing huge problems.
I'll give you a better one. That's minor. You do realize that these third graders that fail out of school, that ultimately fail out, do you know how they come up with the beds that they're going to make for the prison? As the kids drop out of school, guess where they're headed? More often than not.
So the prison...
you're contributing to the prison population.
The corrections departments look at the dropout rate to determine and project how many prisons they need.
That's exact seats, beds in the prison. Ask your principals, because your good principals who will tell you what's going on, ask one of them when they're evaluating and watching what happens when these kids drop out. Now, again, I'm not saying every kid who drops out doesn't make it. I'm saying if you're going by the percentages, it's a bad, bad statistic. So from third grade reading, they get promoted. They end up in middle school. Some work out there. Most don't, because look at the numbers, following it all the way up through high school. So anyway, in the next segment, we're going to come back and we're going to continue a dialogue. And a dialogue this is our community, right? Well, unfortunately, in order to effectuate positive change in your community, you got to interact with the legal system. And that legal system is interacting with you. Call us at 222-TALK. We're here for you.
A law firm dedicated to helping families. A law firm dedicated to you. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Hi, I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. For over 17 years, I've assisted the Jacksonville community by providing a full-service law firm for families, not the rich and powerful, but for everyday families like yours. Since 1998, I have handled some of the most complicated cases in Jacksonville, including Brenton Butler, and more recently, the jury verdict in Jermaine DeBose. Whether it's family law, including divorce, custody, or bankruptcy, juvenile law, personal injury, probate, civil rights, or not-for-profit and churches, I'm dedicated to helping your family with your legal needs. I'm Robert Slama, and I want to be your family's attorney. Call me anytime. My number is 904-296-1050, or you may text me at 838-8607. The law firm of Robert J. Slama.
Final segment of the Lawyer's Edge with Robert J. Slama here today on WBOB AM 600 and 101.1 FM. I'm Roger. Man, that's very scary information you shared with us about the kids not being able to read. And we're just talking during the break. You know, a lot of these kids are like watching television a lot. Maybe we should do something like require the closed captioning to be on all the time. When kids are looking at their TV shows, and maybe even one day a week, you know, if it's their favorite show, mute the audio so all they can do is read. I don't know.
Well,
I'm just thinking off the top.
It's systemic. And when I say systemic is the Florida Department of Education mandates how many hours and where that child needs to be in that classroom. So the issue becomes how you can remediate, but I have a plan for how you can remediate. And okay. I'm telling you, this isn't, when people look at this,
how do you feel about year-round
school?
It's
not complicated. Unnecessary. It's necessary if you're ineffective.
Okay.
Now, there's tutoring and things that can be made available, but I mean, by and large, it's systemic how we handle remediation when we identify that there's a problem.
Some people suggest that it's a problem when the kids get out of school at 3 and mom and dad don't get home till 6. Should we switch that and let mom and dad get off work at 4 and then let the kids stay in school till 6 so that they're home and the unattended hours aren't really an issue for kids?
Roger, we got out of school. We got out at different times. Parents worked, and guess what? We're able to read and write. That's what I'm saying.
Right.
That people, I'm gonna tackle this over time, but I'm going to clue you into what the real problem is. Yeah. And it can be fixed. The problem is, now, listen to this point, Roger. Just grab this point. Isn't it funny that I make this point to all the educators, and they always end up laughing when I say this, because they really don't. I'm not saying it to be funny. I'm saying it to be real. Isn't it funny that we're teaching kids Common Core to teach them how to what? Think outside the box? But our education system doesn't think outside the box. They are as rote and locked in and stuck as stuck can get. And then when I'm proposing something, which is thinking outside the box, that's when I get them to laugh, as I say. Isn't it funny? Maybe the school system needs to start with taking Common Core themselves and figure out different ways to solve problems. That's what we're teaching. In other words, we get locked into, there's one way to do this. One way. There's not one way to do it. There's 12 ways to do it. Now, how do you pick among the 12 ways? See, creativity, analysis, careful thought, dialogue. This is what communities are supposed to be doing. I know I sound unique because I keep talking about real dialogue and what communities can do. It's a matter of us actually doing it instead of today. And I am saying this to everyone who's listening, and I hope you hear this. If you think because you get on Facebook or you go somewhere and you protest that you've done something, you've done nothing. Anyone, I said this as then Sheriff Rutherford years ago, I told him protest is not leadership. Someone, clearly, let's take MLK's day, there were protests, but someone still has to lead. And lead means, how do we make these changes? How do we affect real change? Someone's got to do it. So protest, okay, get on your message boards, go out in the street, be dogmatic. Tell the world you protest. Charles Krauthammer, and I want a tribute to him. He was one of the last, when I was a kid growing up, on Sunday, I used to listen to Bill Buckley having a reasoned dialogue and debate. Whether or not you agreed with his viewpoint, that wasn't the issue. Because he had other people on and they had real dialogue. Charles Krauthammer, real dialogue, gentlemanly dialogue. He said something, though, which I love, that they brought out about his life, about not surrendering his conscience, being able to be who you are in the public square, being able to have real dialogue with people, respectful dialogue. That's what needs to come back, because it's through dialogue. It is through not running out in the street and shaming someone because they're at a restaurant because you don't like what their viewpoint is. It's through real dialogue that our civilization advances. It advances like we do in court. David Trotty's case going on. By the way, if you haven't been to the Lawyer's Edge, my Facebook page, please go by there. We post and put information there, particularly on things that matter. Things like elections, election cycles. Should a seat be appointed? Should it be done through a judicial fiat? Should it be done through the election process as mandated by the Constitution? It's okay that we disagree, but it's through the process of our careful consideration of the issues and the things that matter that we always, what the law should do is, and if you talk to any lawyer who's honest, he'll give you this answer. It forces self-examination. Before I can go in the courtroom and argue, a baker should or should not have the right, a flower person, to make, you know, a floral arrangement, whether right. or not they choose to make a floral arrangement or not.
Right.
I love the other day they were showing on TV, I think Laura Ingraham was, showing President Obama coming out and saying, we can have diverse opinions, and just because someone on this side feels very passionate about it doesn't negate the fact that someone on the other side feels very passionate about it as well. We can both feel passionate about what our beliefs are. That doesn't minimize the one. It doesn't increase the other. But in the end, we have to resolve conflict, and the idea in our society, which has always made us great, that other countries can't do this. That's why when I see this stuff on TV, someone chasing the White House director of
communication. It literally makes us look like a third world country when we can't have
it. It looks worse.
It's very discouraging. We invented, you know, our form of government that countries around the world, emerging democracy republics, they model their countries after what they saw us do. So we can have a civilized, grown-up discussion and debate things as opposed to resorting to, you know, craziness, violence, and the disrespect we're seeing these days.
It comes down to today is, if I disagree with you and I believe I am morally superior to you, I now have the right, because I'm morally superior, to not just shame you, but to go down this road of, as we saw, a lot of people don't realize, after Sarah Huckabee Sanders went back, they left. She and her husband left.
Mm-hmm.
But the family went on to another restaurant across the street. These people followed them.
Chased them to the other restaurant on foot across the street.
Now, I say it this way, you know.
Attorney General Pam Bondi was heckled out of a movie. Couldn't even go spend the evening with her family to see a family-friendly movie about Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
Someone spit in her hair when they got close to her.
See, this is, I'm surprised that they weren't arrested for that. When they say, you know, the Florida's top cop, she, you know, she's a law enforcement officer.
Of course, she's sworn law enforcement. The thing is, though, she could have. And in fact, when she tried to go the other direction, they turned around and stepped in front of her and blocked her path. I think her desire was, clearly in her mind, whether you disagree, that if she got into an altercation with them, they won. Ultimately, the police stepped in between the officers and off she went. But the point is,
you know, someone should have gone to jail for that.
I think so. But the notion that someone even thinks that that's acceptable, appropriate behavior. In other words, let's go back to the days of Bill Buckley. We can sit down and we can debate the merits of whether drugs are appropriate as a measure of liberty that an individual has the right what they do with their own body. We can talk about that all day. Let's have a discussion. Let's have a debate. And if you have a real principle and you have real thoughts, bring them out. But what it doesn't have to turn into, and this is by and large, keep in mind what your children are seeing today. This is the world in which they are viewing how people resolve conflict. How do they resolve it? Not very well. And how do we talk about it and deal with it in the public square? Well, you're seeing what that looks like. And now here we are today. Those of us who are in the courts, what we basically are, as you know, is a place to resolve disputes. And I hope that the rest of society now can once again, you know, watching as the Supreme Court and other bodies go through this process, that we employ reason and we employ all the principles. And I say all of them, because there's a bunch of principles that apply when we're trying to resolve conflict and as we follow the law through its natural conclusion. How do we resolve conflict? How do we, as in this community, because I'm only from this community, from the Jacksonville community, what do we do to better this community? And in order to ever have progress, we've got to move beyond the foolishness that tends to exist in the street these days, from in schoolrooms where foolishness goes on in there. You can go on YouTube. You can pull out your favorite when school's in session. I call it the idiocy of the day. Find your favorite event. As you've seen, a student fighting with the teacher because he takes the phone away, and this student takes someone and slams the teacher to the ground. All kinds of stuff. You want to go to Berkeley. You want to have opposing ideas. That's how we learn. In fact, I always point this out to people when we get into open-mindedness. Isn't it funny that the Greeks, going back when, the great apostle Paul, right? He was invited to the party. And here he is sitting among a bunch of these folks who their notion of God was something that was posted on the Pantheon, and it was a statue or it was a picture. And here Paul comes in and says, brothers, I got to talk to you about a living God. Not only is he alive, forget what you see on the Acropolis and this other stuff. I'm talking about a real guy. He's a living guy. And not only does he live, he lives in me. Those people's heads spun around. But you know what they did, Roger? The point is, they asked Paul questions. Mm. They asked him to understand better what he was understanding. Another place we see it, the famous John 3:16, right? We all know the story. Our good friend comes in the middle of the night to talk to Jesus and ask him, how can a man be born again? But my point is, he was seeking understanding. He was seeking to understand that which was being told to him. This past Sunday, there was an article in the Times Union, which was about whether African Americans are being treated equally in the judicial system. If mm-hmm. you didn't see it Sunday, take a look at it.
Okay.
They put it out there. Here comes the storyline. But it's okay for us to have discussions as a community. As lawyers, if I can help you, please call me at 296-1050. I do criminal law, family law, bankruptcy, foreclosure defense, personal injury, med-mal, and of course, civil rights. But what I want everyone to understand is, at some point, you are in the legal system, or the legal system is interacting with you. You need to be able to handle yourself in that arena. And that means get through that process, which is not always friendly, as we've seen, from people trying to bake a cake to putting together a floral arrangement to people just trying to own their property. We're here for you.